If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Where you as an asset manager, you got to be a little bit level up, but you're like really dealing with the numbers all the time and try to figure out how can you optimize these projects to bring more profit.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Aliza Zen is on a mission to help motivated individuals make money while they sleep and retire faster than they ever dreamed. She is an owner and principal of over 1,000 apartment units across the USA. Aliza, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sam.
The pleasure is all mine. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show. Where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, so we started from residential investment, single family. Our first investment is a condo in Seattle. But the good lesson we learned there is when you buy in the right market, very few things can go wrong. So you could really sabotage yourself by having the wrong strategy, but still come out on top. So our condo was kind of that story, you know, single family, basically a one bedroom condo down in Capitol Hill, Seattle, which is a hopping place. We bought in 2009 with a short sale. Basically, you know, we didn't really negotiate harder either. So we didn't know anything. And then we actually put a 15 year mortgage on it because planning on paying it off. Because by we calculated by basically owning 7 property and paid them off, we should be good to go. Until it hit property number 4, then that strategy doesn't work anymore because you're running out of capital. And because it's 15-year mortgage, you don't have a lot of cash flow either. So you're sitting on the pile of equity with the rising of real estate market in the local markets, as well as the 15-year mortgage with a very low interest rate. So we finally learned about cash flow by, you know, Googling on like, how do you like quit your job by investing in real estate? After buying a couple single family, following the same strategy before, you know, we learned about cash flow, we found bigger pockets. And that's kind of where we learned about multifamily. So from there, we actually traded in our condo and a couple other single family and into fourplexes. So we jumped right in with fourplexes, put them on 30-year mortgage, this time doing it correctly. So, and then got a lot of cash flow. We did value add. Essentially, we took these deferred maintenance properties that still have the tenants on them and then basically revamped inside unit by unit, did ourselves, self-managed our properties and et cetera. So rinse and repeat. Basically, after a couple fourplexes, we then were ready for commercial properties because I feel like I needed some challenges. After a while with the fourplex, you're like, okay, it's the same old stuff. You get it. You know, like I feel very rewarding whenever I view a challenge where I have a new challenge and kind of grow into it. So listen to a lot of podcasts kind of similar to yours and et cetera. And learned about, hey, like commercial is the next challenge. You know, getting over 5 units is a big challenge. So kind of got into one of these property 12 unit down in Tacoma. Basically took on one partner. I was self-managing on a property up until then while having a W-2 job. And my husband was actually renovating them himself. So, you know, things is kind of slow. Per se, because when you're doing kind of yourself, it's a little slow with that. And then from there, I then got that 12 unit. So I was able to remote manage it with a PM. So introduced the whole property management concept and then scaling up. There's a lot of lesson learned we can kind of dive into later on that particular property because we were chasing cash flow so hard. We missed a few other things. Plus, we don't know what the due diligence process are aside from what we already learned for our fourplexes. So there's definitely a lot of lesson learned from that project. And then that's the beginning of our commercial property. And then after that, we did a few of that and then went out of state. Once we go out of state, we got to go bigger. And that's how we got into syndication. Syndication means pull everybody's money together and buy a multifamily. We definitely did a lot of education ourselves. We subscribed into, you know, 1 year I spent almost $100,000 of money on education just to kind of up level ourselves. Because the way I see it is like you can learn in your own pace and make mistakes in your own pace slowly. But in order to get there faster, you know, because my mission was to quit my job as soon as I can, due to we start having small children, you know, the desire to quit my job becomes very strong. And it's not an option to not do that for me in my head. So then I was like, well, if we spend 100K in the education, but we make a million, that's great, right? And then getting there faster is great. So that's kind of how we decide, how my thought process changed in terms of investing in yourself, getting educated, getting plugged in, buy in into like networks that has people who are going to be able to help you get to your next stage. So from there, you know, rest of this history, we did our first syndication deal. And basically from there, you know, now we have 6 property in Dallas, Texas with our partners over there. And we have 4 properties. We sold 4 properties in Phoenix. And then we're kind of embarking on our new kind of properties in Houston area as well. That's kind of where we at right now. And then I quit my job in 2019, November. And then pretty soon after Corona hit, a very interesting time. I didn't timed it, definitely. But, you know, it was really good to see the fact that we actually just wrapped up a 5-month trip with our family. We just went on, you know, went to Phoenix, mixing business with pleasure. Went to Cabo's and like, obviously we did social distance, all that stuff. And then coming back over here after 5 months of visiting relatives and going on our adventure. And I look back as like, if we didn't build these nest eggs and we didn't build where all these passive incomes, we weren't able to withstand the COVID, you know. In fact, funny enough, my W-2 job colleagues got laid off during that whole shebang in the beginning of the year because we work in kind of the travel sector. And they got a job after because it's IT work, right? So it's pretty easy to find another job. But in all, like, we weren't affected. It's almost like we're in a bubble once you kind of had your own freedom created for yourself, financial freedom created for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's an amazing story, one, in that you quit in 2019. And then, of course, everything unwound, but yet you had set up systems that continued to produce an income for you.
Yeah.
So a lot of the stress that maybe some of your other colleagues would have been feeling didn't really affect you.
Right. Yeah. And I think we had multiple strategies when investing multifamily. You know, in newspaper, people talked about multifamily, et cetera. But, you know, people always say don't put eggs in the same basket. We definitely put our eggs in the basket for multifamily per se, but we have diversified it in many different ways inside of the class. For example, we owned our own properties through a 1031 exchange. So there is a big gain on capitalization. And that pot of gold, I would say, has been quadrupling itself within 3.5 years, right? So that's pretty amazing growth. But we don't get a lot of cash flow from there until it hits a certain level. Then we can deploy these cash to creating cash flow, because now your money is kind of making your cash flow. And then other parts is like we also own a few residential fourplexes still. We kept that in the portfolio. So because we're 100% ownerships too, even though they're in Washington, they're subject to moratoriums and et cetera, we manage our tenants very well because we take care of them. So we didn't actually get too much of an impact out of these units. And then on our, you know, syndication portfolio, because you're running a business, any business needs to have some sort of margin of error built in. Even though the newspaper was kind of blasting about how, you know, people, like a lot of renters are not paying or this and that. But across our portfolio, I'll say the worst performance one, which actually got better now, it's about 15% non-collection. But it varies between zero impact to, you know, worst case 15% in our whole portfolio, which is still quite a big chunk. But it creates a diversification between different properties and et cetera. So one property performs maybe worse because they're typically in a C location. And then one property performs really well because they hold strong in an A location property. So, you know, over time also we have selected, knowing that market's going to turn at some point, we just don't know which like wish to is going to drop, but everybody know when you read the economy, it's kind of going up in the top. So at some point, the shoe's going to drop. I would say the shoe has not really dropped yet, but with all the helps and et cetera, I think multifamily is actually probably positioned for a boom. And single family is the areas where I feel like there's maybe some concern. Because right now it seems like the housing bubble, like housing is in a bubble with single family. So that's kind of like where I'm kind of seeing is like the worst is probably over for multifamily as long as governments are kind of assisting their tenants and et cetera. The most scary was last March when these things just happened, you know, shortly after the March and April kind of got worse. Actually, last holiday was also worse than usual. But I feel like the worst is probably like kind of behind us in terms of multifamily. It's actually positioned for a very good boom coming up. And it also tests for the resilience of the asset types. Because if you are providing an essential service, which multifamily is providing house for people, then you're kind of in a better position than other asset types, such as office space, like as a slaughter in the office space, and a potential commercial real estate, like a strip malls and et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to go back to, you know, how you found your first syndication, how you got it funded, things like that. You said something earlier, you said you 1031. So do you own all of your, I guess you can't because you syndicated the money. So you have leverage against your properties.
Yeah. So I do divide ownerships versus syndication to be like two separate bucket. Even in syndication, I mean, I also divide that into more bucket. Like I create partnerships, right? So the way that I kind of bring the deal in is like I own myself. And then in one of the first 12 unit that I went in, because it's kind of experiment, I'll have the skin in the game when it comes to basically my first endeavor into a new area. So in that deal, I had at least 75%, you know, ownership. So to my passive investor, there's only one partner. I mean, it is very low, but I kind of carried that with 1031. But the strategy we use there is pretty aggressive in terms of growth. So whatever that we made, we kind of put it back into the property and the capital improvement, which is allowing us to create a four times the you know, four times the original principal that we put in within short, like less than 3.5 years.
Wow.
Which is amazing. Because we, let's just say you put in, hypothetically speaking, if you're putting 300K to start with, and then 3.5 years later, you're sitting on a 1.2 million, that's the right time to just deploy that 1.2, buy a location asset. I still focus on BNC class property, but in great location. And then even if it sits there and yields 6%, you're pretty good, right? So by the way, it was yielding like 9% now, but you know, but 6% is like, that's the target. That's pretty good. But you know, we also co-own, which then later on, we bring investors into a tenant in common deal. It was kind of born out of that pot of money because we need a 1031. And we explored about different ways to kind of grow bigger, to have more units on the hand because it's easier management, but our money is not big enough yet to buy the whole property. So then we figured out something called a tenant in common where you can put money together into a deal and create your own individual little pots of tenant in common tenants, essentially, with other partners. And so this is kind of where we put, where we got our first deal in Phoenix, where our partner was were local in Phoenix, and they found a deal. They came to me to want to do a syndication, and then the model just doesn't work with syndication. So I was like, but I have this pot of money that will want to do 1031 exchange. So this was perfect project. So we did a couple of that too, but you own a larger ownership group. So people are having a little bit more flexible structure than syndication, and they have decision-making rights. But the invest amount from each investor is a lot more, like $500,000 to $1 million. But it's a big chunk of money that yields the cash flow. So the projects that we did was Scottsdale downtown, to Old Town Scottsdale, really great location. And it's right off the bat, within 3 months, it was yielding like more than 9% cash on cash return. In an A location property like that, you know, you're pretty recession proof in a way. And so that's great. And then the first syndication deal that we got, actually our first syndication deal didn't go through. And we basically, I found a partner in Mississippi. We met at a national conference, nationally network. And then so she was boots on the ground. She found this property in Vicksburg, 50 units. We didn't know too much back then. We didn't know anything about like markets and this and that, but it was cash flow. So we were only kind of counting cash flow, right? So we also sourced the deal directly from the owner. So after many negotiations going through, and I had a goals whenever I get into acquisitions, I wanted to get a agency loan. That was one of the goal because it's harder to kind of, that's the next level up. And then we want to syndicate a deal, essentially. So these were two goals. At the end of the transaction, it took a while. Raising money was more difficult. You know, like getting the loan approved was really difficult with our sponsorship group because we're all kind of green in terms of the agency's eyes. And then also, you know, like getting the stuff across the finish line was more difficult too. So all these combined, we were somehow magically be able to raise all the money, you know, like get all the stuff, like work through all the challenges. The last minute was the day before rate lock, which is typically 48 hours before closing. You know, our lawyer failed to finish a background check on the guarantors because she's nice experienced and she lead us to believe. So she was taking care of the business, and it only takes one more extension day in order to just finish the deal. The owner decided he's going to increase. So we asked the owner for one day extension, and the owner decided he's going to increase the price by 10%. Just the last day, which is crazy, right? Like you worked so hard all the way through, which is abnormal. I would say after so many transactions now, I think that was an abnormal behavior. And then basically we sourced the deal from the owner directly, and then we had to talk to him out of it. But eventually he's like, no, I just want 10% increase on this. And then we said, hey, we can't do it. We have to walk away because we have our investors' interest with us. We can't just increase the price by 10%. It's just not going to work for us. So we lost some money on that deal, about $30,000 or so. Not too much because it's not a market that where you put hard-earned money in. But it's still, you know, but our investor walked away with obviously nothing escaped. So that builds up a lot of reputation for us. So our first syndication deal that was successful is we actually brought these investors. So I joined the network, and one of the syndicators I'm socializing with as syndicators, he was like, hey, I have a project. You know, could you bring some money to the deal and also help us with some asset management stuff? So was able to kind of bring that penned up capital from the previous deal into this deal. And that's how we got into our first syndication deal. We play kind of like a minor role over there by just advising our asset manager on that deal. But however, because we own a small share of the asset management and we're not the primary asset management, given that project's in Dallas and we're living in Seattle. But, you know, during the COVID, that property has been challenged to manage. And there's a couple reasons why. And that's definitely another huge lesson learned for me, because I'm someone who likes to fall forward and taking action versus inaction. So to me, it was a huge valuable lesson learned on this particular project. So it usually takes 7 mistakes to crash a plane. They usually say that. So this property had high crime written all over it, in which the seller has hidden away from us in a way. But also, I will fault that on all of us by not doing enough of a due diligence on crime, right? So we have put all these system and process in place now on all new acquisition, learning from that. And then the second part is the PM selection. You don't know what you don't know. PM is a really large player inside of your commercial deals. Breaker make a deal usually written on the PM. So we got introduced to them. They have very good reputations per se, but it turns out the on-site matters really much, and our on-site wasn't doing anything. And then the third element was inexperienced asset managers. So the folks, my partners are, you know, that was effectively their first syndication deal. So they didn't know how to manage the property manager, or spotting them early enough and taking good actions upon that. And also there's a lack of some abilities to read financials on their site. So some of these could be spotted reading financials and all that stuff, but they're just not very well versed in that. So that kind of caused some oversight on that. And then also investor relations, how they manage investor communication. It wasn't, you know, they don't have bad intent, but when project doesn't go good, you got to increase transparency on your projects. Because everybody understood real estate has risk involving investing. And especially a value-add projects, it can go quite up and down up in the beginning until it stabilizes, right? So it's not a linear formula. So, but without lack of information, then it creates this angst against, like, among all the investors per se. And I myself was part of the principal group, but was not even informed with a few of the things that happened. Mm. So anyway, so for me, after a couple of years of syndicating, coming back to this, during COVID, so that property has changed like three hands inside a property. Project management, property management, and this and that. So me and my other co-sponsor was really concerned about this. And then during COVID, we checked in, and then it was somewhat disastrous reports on that. So that's when we decided we have to step up and helping doing asset management. At that time, I also had more experience. So right away, we discussed March in 2020. We were able to kind of not take over per se, but work with the asset manager on this, and then taking over some of our responsibility and finding resources that we know that we apply for our other properties during COVID. And so we were able to avoid a particular cash cost situation, found a lot of different resources in terms of cash management. Also at the time, they were on their third property management. Seems to be they finally got it right. They finally got it figured out. So we start participating in a PM call. We look at the metrics. We also just simple things can change a lot is project management, because when you have a property that's not doing very well, there's 20 gazillion things for you to do. So you need to really think about prioritization and keep the PMs free with all the other, like you got to feed them slowly to say, hey, work on these things first and then work on the other things. So, mm-hmm. So that's what we noticed on the PM call, that didn't seem to be there's an order of doing stuff. So we kind of came in, brought a little bit our project management skill back in our IT world, and was able to kind of get it everybody to be more on the same page. And then from there, you know, the property is actually, you know, it's still not distributed yet, but it's actually on a positive cash flow now, which is great. It's a huge turnaround from where we were before, like 300-400K down to where we are right now. So, you know, we look forward to work on this asset continuously, helping our asset manager with that and move that forward. So there's a lot of lesson learned from there, from finding different programs to help your projects without putting it into foreclosure or forbearance, and be able to kind of leverage cash management system, be able to negotiate with the vendors, and how do you actually fight off like litigations from your vendor system, and how you hold your PM accountable for. There's so much stuff to learn from there. So I feel like once we go through that project and skate and maybe even make some profit for our investor, you know, that's a huge, huge lesson learned. Better than any other projects that I run that smoothly, you know, like, cause there's just so much to learn from that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You bring up a good point there in that, you know, it's usually the painful experiences that teach us the most. So that's fascinating. Yeah. And I think people also forget how much management is still involved, even when there's a property management company involved. Like, yeah. You still have to manage the property manager.
Absolutely. Because they look at the different metrics than what the asset managers do. So as an asset manager, you're responsible for making sure all the legal, tax filing, all that stuff is optimized for your investor. So you're looking at optimizing your investor's return. Whereas the property management company looks at collections, because their payment is directly related with their collections on incomes. And then so it's their incentive to make sure that everybody's filled up. So give an example here, Sam, is my property manager always prides themselves to say, oh, I'm 100% occupied, right? And then the asset manager should be always pushing a button to say, why are we 100% occupied? We should be at 97%. That means you haven't really implemented rent and optimized that yet. So that's a very interesting dynamic between your property manager who does day-to-day, day-in, day-out vendor management and tenant management, where you as an asset manager, you got to be a little bit level up, but you're like really dealing with the numbers all the time and try to figure out how can you optimize these projects to bring more profit.
Right. Wow. Yeah. You make it sound easy, but you bring up so many points and so many things that we've just got to think about as we own, especially larger scale commercial real estate. So this has certainly been enlightening. Is there anything else that comes to mind? There are some things that maybe you would do differently in the last few years?
Yeah. So I would say we have adjusted our purchase criteria quite a bit from that first, that role that we played, a minor role. So from these experiences, I have basically changed my strategy, how easy real estate strategies are. So right now we are in three markets, essentially Houston, Dallas, and Phoenix. And in any market that we're into, and every time we get into a new market, we focus on that. We build really deep relationships. And once we have four or five properties, then we can kind of like start expanding into different markets. So we're not one of these people. I would suggest people who just started from here not to go all different markets, but like focus on a few markets and go really deep building that relationship. And then the second part is, integrate with your property management company. So I have, now we're going more vertical. Essentially, part of that is having more control over my property, and which means I'm providing more control for my investor, because it's their money. I'm responsible for that. And so now I'm mostly main asset manager. I have operation rights. I have control over my properties. In my Phoenix property, I'm the main asset manager. My Houston property, I'm main asset manager. In Dallas property, I am the major partner with my partners over there. So in all three markets, we're in some ways vertically integrated. So in Dallas market, we have our own PM company with our partners. So really taking control to the next extent, next level. And in Phoenix, I have integrated my PMs to be almost like exclusive partners over there, so that we have integrated him as a general partner. And the same with Houston market. So we have control, a leg up over other syndicators in terms of our operation, right? And also passing some benefits from our property management, because we structured them as a general partner, we were able to reduce some of the property management fee, which I think it's not the right incentives anyways. And, so that passed down some benefits of cash flow to our investor. So the big lesson learned over there is having control when I bring money to a table, bring my investors' money to a table, because it works, because my background was asset managing. Right. And then it turns out I'm probably better than 90% asset manager that's out there. Not to, to my holes over here, but really throughout the whole COVID, that's the realization that we had. So why not take more control? In fact, we're going to go vertical with all the different stack. And I'm even thinking about creating, particular funds so that we have more control over our funding, and then helping our investors to segregate their different ways to invest, so that they align their investment strategy more towards their goal, right? So we have decided to create different classes in our recent syndications, where one class is focused on cash flow. That's a fixed rate return at maybe a 9 or 10% rate higher than usual. And another class is focused on equity upside at a 7% pref rate. And so then you can have a share upside of the equity. So kind of separate the investors, because we realize that the investors has different goals. So if you're quitting your job, then you may be more interested in that class A, where it returns your capital sooner and at a fixed rate return. And then if you're building wealth, then you want to cash in on that equity gain. So you may be interested in a different class, right? So that's things that we also help our investors on. And then we just started a education courses too, which is to help people to get to the next level in terms of where we at.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome. Alisa, this has been, entirely enlightening. Really, really enjoyed this conversation. Let's jump here into the final four if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I would just say roll up your sleeve and do it. Figure out whatever way you can do it. Do your first deal, because you're going to learn so much more other than just learning from textbook.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely true. What is one thing you were doing to stay on top of your game?
We have KPIs, the key metrics, basically set up our operations. So I think there's two things I want to say is metrics, making sure that we have set criterias so that we can hold people accountable for their part of job, a very clear role carved out, and also hiring or partner up with people, because it's a people business. Like, selecting investors, another thing that we have is like, everything is about selection. I see everything as a partnerships, even passive investors. It's a relationship that you build long term. So people to me is very important. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
So we are basically, this education thing is a way for us to kind of give back to people. Honestly, I don't even think I make a profit on that sector. Right. But it's so rewarding seeing our student really successfully like getting to their next step. Example is at Easy FIU, when our student just closed their first commercial deal, like commercial multifamily deal. That's exciting. Another one just did their first agency loan through the networks that we have built out. And then two of other students are on their way on their first syndication. So these are like great, you know, rewarding experience I have where I feel like me living my life is really meaningful when I made an impact into other people's trajectory of life.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome. Alisa, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah. So check us out at Easy FI University if you're interested to kind of check out what we offer in terms of education mentorships. And also, you know, easyreestate.rocks, R-O-C-K-S, not .com, is another place if you're interested to see our projects that we're doing for multifamily.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.